from National Treasury are also on their way. But they have agreed, the two gentlemen here have agreed that we could start the meeting. The others will join us as we proceed. We are receiving a briefing on the third quarter spending outcome of departments today from the National Treasury. Let me then allow the National Treasury to take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. My name is Dondo Mukhajane. I'm responsible for public finance at the National Treasury. It's always a pleasure for us to come to this committee to discuss quarterly numbers and then also discuss key issues that may be of concern to you. As the Chair indicated, some of the team members are on their way. They should join us any time from now. But I thought, Chair, let me start by indicating that Chair will remember that some time ago, Mr. Sheikh Imam raised a very important issue about Parliament and that what is that that we're doing around the spending in Parliament and the issues related. And he was going on about the issues around travel and so on and so on. So in that meeting, what my response was, that Chair, I said, we note what you say, and we will have to do something about it. And then I'm happy to report back to this committee to say that that issue was taken into account. We had a process. In terms of the FIMPLA Act of Parliament, there is a process that the Act allows, that the Minister of Finance should engage the Speaker and the Chair in finalizing issues around the appropriations for Parliament and for legislation, whereby also MECs in provinces are involved. We agreed on a process that is led by or backed by a technical process of officials to ensure that firstly issues of budgeting are addressed at that level. The speaker and the nine legislature speakers and the national speaker and the chair met with the minister and the deputy minister sometime last year in December and agreed on a way forward in terms of how and when to engage. After that, we met as technical officials between the secretary, our DG, and ourselves to agree on way forward. And then we then involved all national, all provincial legislatures, including some provincial treasuries, and agreed that we have to come up with a protocol document. The protocol that will essentially outline two things: a sort of call it a budget process of some kind around issues that are pertinent to legislatures, all 10 parliament and the non-legislatures, including issues of monitoring and spending thereof, which I think the interest from Mr. Sheikh Imam at the time was at. So we have a protocol document that is going through various stages in the speakers forum, including in the treasury processes, in the budget council and technical committee for finance, to understand so that we also find each other in terms of how we address the issue. So I just thought, Chair, let me flag that and say it's something that we took to heart, because even if you look at our documents that we circulate, I'm not the presentation, the actual documents, you will notice that for Parliament, for instance, there's no reporting except to say that we don't highlight exactly what the spending issues are, because Parliament is dealt with separately. So we are happy that at least we are able to find each other in terms of both setting budget processes and also monitoring issues. And as the process go on, we'll be able to actually inform if there are any benefits coming through from this. Secondly, Chair, in our presentation, in the actual document, we have significantly improved the document and what it should aim at doing in terms of supporting, and we kind of remove some unnecessary issues that we were raising. But we've got a very important section under each item of the 40 votes, and it's a simple paragraph that's titled Issues for the Committee to Note. So I think, you know, it also makes it easy for the committee to navigate through this document, to just pick up sometimes on those issues that we think are critical for the committee to note, and then the committee can use those issues in whichever way. Because you will remember in our last engagement, we kind of said our aim is wanting to empower the committee to the best of our ability so that the committee can be able to engage with other committees or in other portfolio committees, if you want to call it that. So for today's purposes, we are looking at quarter three spending and also trying to actually understand where we are. Now, what we normally say is that the benchmark would always be at 75%. If every department is around 75, 72, 60, I mean 69, 77, we wouldn't be very worried around spending trends. But if it's at 60 or 65, then it's an issue for concern in that department as to what's happening, because the initial indication would be that service delivery has been compromised in any language that you want to think of. So we're very worried. Or it could be that people are not being paid salaries. If the salary bill is not around a 69-75% range. So we kind of are comfortable that the numbers as we see them in terms of this, we're not very worried based on available budget and spending. And I want to bring to the attention of the committee, just for the purpose of the first two slides, this slide, slide 3 and slide 4, that there is a table in the actual document, in page 2 of the document, which details the all 40 votes, and it also details the appropriation and the projected spending, and that at the end we are saying there's a variance of about 2.8% of spending, which accounts for the first three quarters. And this is less than projected expending, and it's about 2.8%. So again, as I said, it's a ballpark figure, and we are not very concerned because, as you can see, spending to date is about 74% across all departments of 74%, and you can actually, as I said earlier, only Parliament. With Parliament, because it's not accounted for, what we do is to transfer the whole amount through to Parliament, the 1.6 billion, as you see there for the quarter. So, yeah, so there's a list of those spending, and what we normally do, which the committee is aware, that we go through each of the clusters. We've got these six clusters: health and social development, education and related departments, economic services, urban development, infrastructure, justice, crime prevention, security, and these are the cluster function groups that we have organized ourselves around, and some of my team members will be responsible for various clusters that will be joining. So the presentation essentially will be around those clusters, and we'll go through each and every cluster. Slide 5, spending outcome by vote. As indicated in the table there, departments spent almost 535 billion or 74% of available budget of 722 so far. And as I indicated before, that if departments are spending much less or much higher, then we are getting worried because, as I indicated in the last meeting, that our cash flow requirements are determined by the kind of projections that we made, and based on how much you borrow, you obviously have to level it out so that we don't have enough money and it's lying in our bank accounts at high interest costs. So our cash management system actually is working pretty well on that front, and we are not very worried. Departments with significantly higher than projected spending based on variance of 400 million or higher include Home Affairs, and there are reasons outlined in each and every department as to the Home Affairs, 714.9 million or 12.9%. And I'll explain further this point in particular. Home Affairs is very peculiar. It's interesting because you'll remember you all read in the newspapers around the challenges they have at ORT in particular, around the officials that there's not enough personnel. Home Affairs is one of the only departments that heeded our call to actually look into their compensation budget. The committee will know that in this current budget, we have said departments should be cutting their compensation budget by 10 and 15 billion in 17, 18, 18, 19. That is what we passed on in last year's budget. So Home Affairs was one of the departments that took that call seriously and not employ people, because once you employ in last year, the impact goes on for the MTF. Then you'd have a big problem in trying to reduce the numbers as dictated to in this current budget that we just passed last week, whereby 15 and 10 billion was needed to actually reduce the compensation budget. So Home Affairs, this what you may see as sort of underspending for the three quarters, is essentially that the bulk of that 12.9% is spending in particular in personnel. But then we then knew later that Home Affairs has got a problem, because then clearly there are challenges there in which you are dealing with them in trying to help them moving forward and actually allowing them to come up with various processes to actually ensure that we understand and we actually open up for them to employ more immigration officers, so that ORT is not clocked in the way it was clocked before. Defense and military veterans, 1.3%, down from about 753, and we were worried. We came to the committee and say, we were worried that it's almost, 750 is almost a billion if you think about it, that if a department is not managing its quarterly numbers properly, then so we are comfortable that that number came down with the kind of challenges that they have, because they are talking big numbers in terms of defense and military veterans personnel. These are departments that I've just mentioned, those two departments that with significantly higher than projected expenditure. Departments that significantly spend less than projected based on the variance of 400 again, I've listed them there. Higher education, 3.1, COCTA, and et cetera, et cetera, and the police. And under each vote, we'll try and go, sorry, each function group, we'll try and discuss under each to understand what exactly the reasons are for this spending less than projected. Again, that's just the economic classification of what I was explaining. This is the total number. 15 billion of 2.8% less than projected spending, and 22% less than projected expenditure on payments for capital asset, back down from 3.2% in quarter two. So again, the details would be in the document. Now, going back to the function group I mentioned earlier on, starting with health. Health spent about 74.8% of available budget. Spending is fairly on track, lower than projected spending, mainly under hospitals, tertiary health services, and human resources development program and administration program. And this we did obviously inform the department so that they can actually look into those four spending programs to ensure that they address the lower than projected spending. Social development spent 1.1 billion. Or 1% that projected. Slow spending mainly with social assistance program on the child support grant as a result of a number of children falling off the system. Now, the social development has got a very interesting case here, because especially this child support grant. I can comfortably say that for the past 10 or 15 years, we have not managed to... We've got various models that we use, both there's SASA and the department ourselves, on an ongoing basis engage around projections and around the modeling of child support grant. But it's very difficult sometimes, and we'd rather have enough than not have enough in terms of what we put aside for social development. So, also in terms of those that come on and those that fall off the system because of the age cutoff. So there'll always be some kind of discrepancies, call it that, or slow or high spending, based depending as to exactly which time of the year you're talking about. But we are also comfortable that we are on top of that, so there's no point around us getting very worried about money that you've set aside for social development, for child support grant, and thinking that we may not have. So we are okay. In terms of economic classification, social development spent 35 million more than projected under goods and services. This was due to payment of accrual commitments from 15-16 financial year for traveling costs audit fees, venue and facilities, operating leases, fleet services, legal fees, and computer services. And the department is likely to overspend on goods and services. Now, I must bring to the attention of the committee that social development historically has been having this kind of challenge, and you can see it in terms of the kind of commitments that they had to pay from 15-16 onwards. It tells you that in financial year 15-16, there were some challenges that they have in terms of accounting for their goods and services. Accrual commitment, simply for not understanding, I normally say to people that there is invoices that you had in your drawers and you did not pay on time. So meaning at some point later, you have to pay. And the challenge is that for financial year 15-16, the payments are only accruing now, meaning you are affecting this year's current budget. So then you have a problem because you are spending this year's money for payments that you are supposed to have made in the past. So now, on an ongoing basis, we engage the department in our bilateral, quarterly bilaterals around spending patterns and around budgeting for, and it's important because it's one thing it becomes, and as politicians you'll understand, it becomes politically insensitive when I, as a treasury official, go to a department and say, you cannot go on to this community project because you didn't budget for it. It becomes a very difficult conversation. But if you engage the department, you find that many projects that are being undertaken are projects that either would not have been budgeted for that financial year, but meaning that there is money, and then you didn't budget, but you end up extending yourself for. So it sometimes becomes a very difficult conversation, especially approaching the adjustment budgets every year, when you have to adjust budgets, or if I have to approve transfers moving money from one program to the other because they didn't budget enough. Say it could be for venues or for tent hire, for the Mikonzo project that they engage on. That is a sort of community outreach program. So the department on that score needs to come, you know, make sure that it's on track in terms of budgeting and making sure that allocations are made for some of the programs. And here we've just mentioned, because once you decide to say the department decides to go on a community engagement process, say in Limpopo, and it was not budgeted for, and instead of having two, you budgeted for two, then you had four, and you have to have it. It then becomes difficult because then you affect staff costs, travel costs, all the costs coming together, because then you have to move staff, you have to pay for their travel, and it becomes a very costly exercise if you don't budget for it properly. And then other programs then suffer as a result of these other programs that are critical but were not budgeted for properly. So we obviously encourage that the department should, on an ongoing basis, ensure that programs and engagements and initiatives are budgeted for properly, and then we don't have issues around moving money in and out. Because as you can imagine, we don't have control sometimes of the environments that departments make. The last meeting we discussed environments with you, and at the time it was clear that we sometimes as treasurer we are caught offside because some of the environments are in, we only see them when they submit documents for the adjusted budget, as we saw last year when money was moved. And especially if you remember, it was trade and industry having moved money and cars being bought and so on and so on. We were not aware, or nor did we approve those transfers, I mean environment per se. Because in some cases, the treasury regulations allows a movement across which you may not see only, and you can only see them at that time. So basically all I'm punting in that last bullet is we continuously, and with your support that can help, continuously have to punt proper financial management around budgeting, and without making sure that we are found wanting as government in this program. Education and related departments. Now, related departments would be labor and arts and culture, because as I said, they're all clustered in one, and in there you also have higher education. Basic education spent 2 billion or 10% lower than projection, variance mainly under program 2 and 4. Program 2 is curriculum support and monitoring. Under goods and services, due to delays in receiving invoices for the printing and distribution of workbooks for grade R to 9 and learner and teacher support material for the National Senior Certificate Learner Retention Program, our second chance program. So this, when we engage the department, you can call it, we become harsh and say these are programs that we shouldn't have problems with in terms of spending because they impact directly on the livelihoods of learners on the ground. So once there are discrepancies like these in terms of especially distribution of workbooks and learner support, then it means the system is not functioning well and then we have a problem. So it's an ongoing conversation that we have to do with the department. But here we just bring it to the attention of the committee that the department has spent 2 billion lower than projection. But again, if you look at the full picture, it's not a big problem. Program 4, planning information, and again in program 4, planning information and assessment, low spending is due to the implementation delays in school infrastructure backlogs grant. Slow spending also due to poor performance by some implementing agents, difficulty in replacing underperformers, and delays in finalizing the merging and rationalization of schools in Eastern Cape province in particular. And underspending in this grant has been a problem since its inception in 2011 and 2012. Now, this is a problem, but we did something about it in this current budget that you passed last week, if members can recall. We combined this grant with the basic school infrastructure grant, and this is the last year where this grant is on its own because focus interventions in this province in particular to ensure that the RCD program is accelerated and the DBSA comes on board in a big way in terms of supporting infrastructure backlogs. And the reality is that on an ongoing, every time we read about challenges in that learners are experiencing, schools, with no water and sanitation, children studying under trees, a whole lot of problems that we all know. And when there is money, the difficulty is that there's money in the system, but there's no spending. So I think, and Chair, this is one area where I would recommend to the committee that we have a joint engagement between ourselves as this committee and education and the portfolio committee to understand what the issues are here and even to assist where possible. But we are comfortable that the Department of National Education has owned up to this to a point where there's rationalization of these two grants and they want to do something. But it's also that final last push that we think this committee can also assist in ensuring that this program spends and this program we're saying that underspending has been a problem since the start of this grant, and we cannot afford to have that going on forever. Higher education and training spent 3.1 billion or 6.8% lower than projected spending, mainly delays in the payment of university infrastructure EMN grant, that is Program 3 in university education. And again, we've got two universities, Sol Plaatje and Mpumalanga, and it would be in that space whereby transfers or payment for this infrastructure is an issue. But again, the department is on top of that. We don't have to worry much. Labour spent 123.6 billion or 5.3 lower than projected, mainly due to delays in filling of posts and delayed payment of invoices and goods and services. Filling of posts, as I said in the last meeting, and again, honourable members, I was guilty last time, and I know members took me on when I said, we welcome that, and I know my colleague is laughing there. No, it is an issue that I mentioned, and I know I was taken on, and I understand. But Chair, it's important because, and we saw now last week in terms of the 10 and the 15 billion. And the cut that we in compensation budget, because if we don't contain compensation. I know it's impacting on jobs, and but it's all in the public sector anyway. So it's and we're saying don't cut critical. Don't cut to a point where service delivery is impacted. If it's impacted, let's talk. And we've done that. And I've in the period approaching the budget, I had a lot of, if not all, in fact, half of these departments. I personally had engagements with all those departments, in some cases with ministers, on, for instance, defense, because defense was big in terms of, we are saying defense cut, but we know if you have to cut, you've got challenges in terms of your border controls, you know, you've got controls, and many other challenges that you may have. But we've been engaging, and we forced the departments to come up with what we call HRBP plans, isn't it? Yeah. Human resource business plans. Say, how are you going to manage? And some departments, and we're easy with other departments, like I said, Home Affairs at the beginning of the meeting, that initially we were hard on them, but, you know, and they understanding the challenges. We don't want to a point where, because the moment you stop people from employing, especially immigration officers, it impacts on tourism. It impacts on the long queues. People say, I'd rather use another route. Then the next thing, our own airlines are not profitable. People will choose other routes and then choose other tourist destinations other than South Africa because, you know, you queue for more than 2 hours, you know, just waiting for you to come in or go out of the country. So we are being sensitive in approaching freedom of post, but for this department, it is fine because there's no big, huge issues. But again, labor inspectors are a big problem, and the department has to manage that because it's important that on the factory floor, the Department of Labor is present in terms of the role that they have to play. And obviously, and delay of payment of invoices, again, we are not, our engagements with departments, there is a chair, we are not apologetic in the way we engage because we believe the payment within 30 days should be enforced. So if departments exceed that, we take that seriously and we actually become very unpopular with the department as you engage with them on an ongoing basis. Arts and culture spent 176.2 million, or 5.5% lower than projected, mainly due to late invoices from public works for the repairs and maintenance of the National Archives Old Library Building and upgrading of the air conditioning system at the National Archives under Capital Works Project. So it's an ongoing project. I mean, you know, our building in Pretoria is next to the old library. We know it's under renovation currently, the maintenance of that building. So it's something that we can see. And it's a good thing that the department cannot just pay without getting invoices. I mean, that's a basic thing that I think is a basic good financial management. But before you pay, you need to know what you're paying for. So transfers cannot just go to DPW without having seen invoices. And so art and culture is exercising prudent financial management. And again, we're not very worried. Economic services, those departments will be under this economic services, trading industry, rural development and land reform, small business development, environmental affairs. Trade and industry spent 1.3 billion or 15% less than projected expenditure, mainly under Program 6, incentive development and administration, due to outstanding compliance documents, unprocessed claims, and outstanding agreement of enterprise investment, and the APDP program. So again, this is something that I think is important and they must do it and they must ensure that before transfers are made that compliance documents are signed and claims are processed properly. So it's again one of those issues that can be explained as to why they spend less than projected expenditure. Rural development and land reform spent 1.4%, 18.4% lower than projected, mainly to slow space of departmental expenditure under the restitution program. This is something that I think we all are aware in terms of the Constitutional Court ruling, that the program will obviously not spend because of that ruling where the issue on the invalidity of the Restitution Amendment Act and of July 2016. Significant spending is also recorded in the National Geomatics Management Services program as a result of late transfers to departmental agencies and accounts, particularly to the registration of this training account budget. Now, there's no excuse because once Parliament has appropriated transfers in the form of Appropriation Act, All the department has to do is to agree with the entities in that particular department as to how money is going to flow to this. So if it's as a result of late transfers, there can never be an excuse, because your payment schedule, as I tried to explain to the committee last, your payment schedule has been, it should be synchronized with money coming through from us to the department. So how you transfer money should actually be synchronized with how you, when you get it and at what point. So it's again an issue that we have raised with the department, and we think it's a minor thing that shouldn't be a problem. And we are monitoring this very closely across all departments, by the way, to ensure that the synchronization between transfers to the departmental agencies and the monies that they get, because our transfer is pretty scheduled as per the payment schedule that we agree upfront before the financial year starts with the department. Environmental affairs spent 286 million, or 5.9% lower than projected spending, mainly due to slow spending on EPWP programs, and delays are due to protracted contract negotiation with implementing agents. This is an ongoing thing, and I think it's one of the things, by the way, where we sometimes departments are left found wanting, when clearly we our ability to negotiate contracts becomes an issue, and then we encourage the departments to. And again, I mean, we where we sit, we cannot necessarily get involved, but it's between the department and the implementing agents. Because one assumes that at this point, we've agreed as to what should happen. We have agreed in terms of what are the targets in terms of temporary jobs or work opportunities created through these various programs. So there's no excuse that the program is underspending, because if the program underspends, simply means that the work opportunities created, people don't get opportunities to actually participate meaningfully in the economy. Event development and infrastructure, there you've got COCTA, human settlements, and water and sanitation. COCTA spent 3 billion or 5.6% lower than projected spending, mainly due to the withholding of local government equitable share and the municipal infrastructure grant due to unapproved rollovers and lower than expected spending on immediate relief disaster grants. Now, this is an interesting area, because which we don't like doing, by the way. The moment you withhold equitable share for whatever reason, then it means the municipalities are not able to spend. But in a way, the regulatory framework allows us to do that. And this, by the way, is a last resort in many cases, because we don't want to be seen to be holding back on service delivery, because local government is where actually service delivery happens. So COCTA is on top of, and we're not very worried. The only challenge that we have and that we're going to have moving forward is around the next point and the issues that was in the newspapers. And for the purpose of today, obviously we have another meet. Actually, one of my colleagues who's responsible for this is not going to join us. She's currently with the Committee of Water and Sanitation, and I know we are meeting again Friday, where we'll detail some of the things I'm talking about. For instance, the water trading entity, which is in water and sanitation, is being owed billions of rands by municipalities and the water boards. Now, and municipalities are not paying the water trading entity. The water trading entity then is forced to run huge overdrafts. In terms of the arrangements that are in place, water trading entity as a component of government cannot on a daily basis, their account must be zero. That's in terms of the assets and liability regulatory framework that we have. That account every evening must be zero. But we see that account not being zero, being billions or even 1.9, 2.3 billion, only because the inflow is not coming through. So the conversation that we must have openly is with municipalities, and COCTA obviously will have to come to the party to ensure that municipalities pay for their water to the trading entity so that the entity as an entity can function. Because currently the trading entity has got financial challenges because they are being owed. They've got running a huge overdraft because they are being owed. And there's an ongoing communication we're having with the department, and we hope we'll resolve it as time goes on. Then they are forced then to as a department as a whole then. And that's why here we say they spend more than projected due to high expenditure in the accelerated community infrastructure development program. They cannot scale down on this program, and we understand. Because once you scale down, then there's no delivery on the ground. And this is water. Water is life. Water can be critical. So you have a problem. Secondly, the regional bus infrastructure grant is also showing is also reflected under higher than projected spending for capital assets. So let's not go into detail on the water, because I think we'll have enough chance to actually, and we have a specific presentation that we will make and more information on the actual challenges that the department is facing. And I'm happy that this is being set aside for Friday, so we can go into details. Human settlements spent $875 million, or 3.9% lower than projected, mainly under the Human Development Finance Program due to non-payment of public entity transfers for operational and capital programs. And again, the same point I made earlier when I discussed the environmental affairs and the rural development around late transfers to departmental agencies. So the same issue apply here. Justice, crime prevention and security. The police spent $492 million, or 0.8% lower than projected, mainly under visible policing program due to slow spending on transport equipment due to delays in the finalization of transversal contract. Now, this is a good lesson and for us, for future, in the way we have to fund, in the way we finally have to appropriate money for whatever program, it could be police or any other. I'll tell you one thing that's important. We gave visible policing resources last year, this budget. How much was it, Randa? About $500 million. And remember, it was at the backdrop of the tragedy, Marikana challenges that we had. And we kind of started putting money. Now, this program is a slow spending because of transport equipment due to delays in the finalization of transversal contract. Sometimes we are quick to fund, we are quick to resource departments when we didn't do proper background checks and information and planning, which is key. Because we would have allocated enough for them to spend this year so that we can then put money, enough money for the second and for the third year, because sometimes we kind of forget that we have got a three multi-year MTF framework, and we have to make good use of this system that's there. So, because it's one thing to put money, and in the same year you underspend. So that sometimes is a bit worrying. But however, visiting policing remains important, and especially with the challenges of the issues that we have broadly, especially around crime in our areas, both townships and rural areas, and in cities. Detective services program due to slow spending, compensation of employees, and this is due to vacancies. And again, I smile when I say departments not, because I think we just need that 1 or 2% growth in our economy to get a little bit extra so that we can then start employing more people who will actually make. So, because if not, and we can talk later, and I know we discussed it yesterday, and we are going to be responding tomorrow to you and to the other committee around our debt situation. The moment you don't have growth, which results in you not having enough tax revenues, you don't have a choice. You have to go and borrow. I came to this committee last year, Chair, and I showed a very interesting graph around our debt trajectory and where we were. And I said we were okay in the first 10, 15 years of our democracy. Only the first 2 years, up to 98, things were not going well, provinces were overspending, we sorted ourselves out. Then our economy started growing at 5-6%, if you remember. We had enough money in our back pocket. We did things, we did good things, and I'm proud because, you know, all of us were saying this democracy of ours is working, expanding child support grant, the age criteria, and many other programs. And then when we were spending at that, our non-interest spending was hitting around 26-27% of GDP at the time. The global economic financial crisis hit in 2008-2009. Tax revenues declined. But what we did, we then kept our, and which we should be proud of as a country, and I said it the last time to you, we kept our spending at that high level. We were able to sustain our spending. We didn't drop. We didn't just all of a sudden stop grants and when things were bad. But we kept. But what we also did, we started our debt to GDP ratio started hitting, going up from around 26% in the 90s to around, we're saying it's going to hit around 48% or so. That's what we said in last week's budget, and we wanted to stabilize at that point. So stabilization, I mean, the argument that I had people talking about, Chair, was that you said to us last year that, I'm not talking budget, but we said it's at 42%, we are stabilizing. Now you're increasing by 6% to 48. You're still saying you're stabilizing. And we continue saying that, and it's true, Chair, because your growth is a factor, is a denominator in all of this. So if your growth is what it is or is slowing down, you keep. But if our growth was increasing, then the stability would be flat or it didn't go down. So because of growth, which is not increasing but instead decreasing in terms of estimates that we put now recently, last week, growth is a factor in our economy. So, and for me, all the spending programs that have got the potential to boost growth, if we're not spending more on that, we'll be left wanting. I know I spend a lot of time on this, apologies, but I thought maybe for the purpose of connecting yesterday's discussion with today's and the spending, it makes it easy for committee members to actually understand where we come from with some of these things. The administration program in the police spent $662 million, higher than projected, mainly due to higher than anticipated payment of computer services, particularly in item CETA system development and operational support. Defense and military veterans spent $428 million, or 1.3% higher than projected spending under various programs. In particular, administration, higher spending is due to the payment of accruals for accommodation charges as a result of delays in the receipts of invoices from the Department of Public Works, as well as the higher than anticipated payment made to the Department of International Relations regarding the defense attaché offices. Now, we will talk later about the defense attaché offices and DERCO, because we have a small issue there that I think we want to bring to the attention of the committee. And also is an issue moving forward also for us. And again, you can see it's impacting on this, because we've got defense attaches across all our missions in out there in various countries. And the exchange rate component is also a factor. So the more you have defense attaches, the more you have embassies, the more you have a challenge in terms of always going to be left wanting in terms of your projections and the budget that you put aside for this purpose. Landward defense systems, higher spending due to the once-off payment of about 126 million for homeowners allowance that should have been paid in 15-16 financial year. Military health support, higher spending due to high cost of outsourced medical service and medical waste removal. That's another, area that one day when we have time, we can engage the department in terms of some of the spending items. But again, we've got a very good relationship with the department, and our engagements are ongoing, and we're not be comfortable that they're on track. Justice spent $205 million, or 3.4% lower than projected, expenditure mainly under administration due to delays in settling employees' performance bonuses, delays in submission of invoices of office accommodation by the Department of Public Works, as well as delays in procurement of office furniture and equipment for head office. Again, this is your usual challenges that are ongoing on a daily basis. But I think our approach to this is we're not apologetic about raising on an ongoing basis with the departments around invoices that should be submitted to Public Works, where Public Works in some cases should be settling bills. They can range from rental accommodation to office accommodation to everything, because everything is centered around. You find that the city of Cape Town or city of Joburg or Tshwane or whatever, departments are owing the municipalities. Not only the departments owe municipalities. When you check its leases, accommodation, and these invoices will most probably be lying with the Department of Public Works, and Public Works will be reluctant to pay because the transfers did not happen. So this, as I say, is an ongoing challenge that we have, but we raise it all the time with the department. Last is administrative services, home affairs, DERCO, and national treasury. Home Affairs spent 714 or 12.5 higher than projected, mainly due to the expenditure related to the issuing of enabling documents, which is funded through self-finance allocated during the adjustment budget. This is something that we agreed upfront with Home Affairs, that obviously, when you pay for a passport, that money remains with them. It's not a big deal. We are happy and things are okay then. Now, Delco, spending of 2.8 million or 4.0 lower than projected, mainly under administration and international cooperation programs. Slow spending in outstanding invoices for ICT projects as well as transfer budget in relation to storage. Slow spending due to cost containment measures that the department is spending, implementing missions abroad in relation to rentals, where the department managed to negotiate zero increase in some leases abroad. Now, this is what, in our bilateral with the department, this is what we emphasize. We said things are bad in terms of, our budgets and our you have to, for you, cost containment measures should go beyond the prescript. You must come up with your own cost containment because you understand your environment very well. This is what we are saying to Delco. To a point where we are saying, if it means closing some missions, you must close them. But then it impacts in terms of our relations and where we want to go and our strategic and our foreign policy and so on. So we didn't want to get into that. But where possible, do something. That's when they started negotiating leases. That's when they started to reduce numbers of people that they deploy. And one classic example that they once gave us was that you've got a very, very, one of your, I don't know which country it was, but I think it was the U.S., where in one mission overseas, the U.S. will have about 5 or 6 people, and we would have 20 plus in the same mission. Then you ask yourself, somewhere in Europe, I forgot which country. And when they gave the examples, it's good. That's exactly how you have to be able to benchmark yourself. Look at your functions. So we are happy that they are slowly cutting personnel. They are slowly rationalizing projects. Because for them, it's double fold. It's their personnel budget, including exchange rate fluctuations and challenges. So on an ongoing basis, we discussed this with them. National Treasury spent 312 million for 1.5% higher than projected, mainly due to additional expenditure incurred in the IFMS system, purchasing of software licenses. This is not for Treasury, it's for the whole of government. Now, if there's one day where me and Gillian were very ruthless, which National Treasury was when we are agreeing with them on this project. IFMS, if you have to look at the history of this program, has been for a long, long time. And we have spent lots of money on this thing, and we are not seeing any results. And where we sit as public finance division, the treasurer, we are saying, DG, you have to account. At what point will we say we have got it right? So we are comfortable that finally the IFMS program is running, and it's been finalized. Agreements have been entered with some service providers to ensure that this should be a solution to our problems around an improved financial management system of the whole of government. Because what this thing brings is something that will make it life easy for us from an oversight point of view, where in some cases you'll even see live information, because currently it's very difficult. Based on the current system of basic bus system, and we also have even two other provinces using different systems. Northwest is using a different system. Limpopo is using a different. I'm talking about finance management systems now. So we are made to believe by the Treasury that we are finally on track. But this is one thing that will keep coming back to you to report in terms of this. And this is, we are like hawks. We are grabbing this program to make sure that it works, because spending to date hasn't been satisfactory. And this is one of the areas where, in the Treasury's management letter over the years, was always raised as an issue flagging. That's key for the National Treasury. So, Chair, that's basically a summary of the thick document that is in front of you. But as I said to some members who came after, was that under each vote, we've got a paragraph that members must note If you want to pick it up, you can pick it up. I've got two colleagues. One is Randani is from Justice and Protection Services, and Gillian is from Administrative Services. The reason I brought them is that in case you want to get deeper into this, because I think the assessment that I'm making every quarter with them is that the other challenges, and I did explain, but Ulrike, who's responsible for the urban development infrastructure service, she's currently with Water and Sanitation Portfolio Committee. She's there now. But these three sort of function groups would be the key ones that, if there are issues, and that's why I only brought them this time and not brought all six of them. And the others are straightforward challenges that I should be able to handle if need be. So, Chair, thank you very much. I know I took a little bit long. You said we should be quick, but I wanted to give justice to the issues as presented to you today. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable, before we go on, I don't know whether any one of your members would like to add anything. If
thanks, Chair, and apologies for arriving late. My name is Renan Randel, responsible for Justice and Protection Services. In the slide, we just highlighted three biggest departments that are lagging behind in terms of spending, whereas others, they are on track. I know this is the third quarter report, but one thing that I should highlight, it's also highlighted in the report, it's correctional services. We're beginning to get some red lights where they are projecting overspending, mainly because of nutritional services and farm suppliers. Those are the only major issues that I think I should also bring to the attention of the committee, correctional services. But at the moment, in the third quarter report, they are on track, but it's like come quarter four or when financial statements are finalized, we are likely to see overspending. But we've engaged them, we've given them the advice to deal with this projected overspending. But in the quarter three, you won't see that they are on track. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members and chairperson. My name is Gillian Wilson, and I'm responsible for the administrative services sector. I just want to comment on DIRCO. I think we are encouraged by the fact that they are implementing stringent savings to ensure that they do not overspend their budget. The negative effect of the exchange rate resulted in DIRCO requiring additional funding in the adjustment budget. We did not comply by giving them the full request. So it's up to DIRCO now to look at ways how they can implement savings in the cost of the foreign missions and also in terms of the quick wins in terms of the goods and services budgets and so on. So they have done an exercise where they have renegotiated the leases in the foreign missions. And because of that, there was no real increase in the rental of some of the missions, and that caused them to sort of not spend their full allocation in the third quarter. Thanks.
Perhaps just on between foreign affairs and, international relations and public works. There's an issue that was raised with the committee members in Germany about government property lying unused in the former East Germany. I don't know whether the National Treasury is aware of that, but that issue was raised by the embassy there, and it seems to be a challenge that needs to be addressed. and we would like National Treasury to look into that issue, perhaps jointly with the Public Works, because we are informed that property would belong to Public Works. We will follow up that issue with yourselves, because it was very strongly raised with us. Honourable members, Honourable Shopestole, Honourable Fick, Honourable Manana, Honourable Mahlopa, and Honourable McLachlan.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the department for informing us. You know, I'm worried about on social development, on this, the accruals. And you mentioned invoices lying in cupboards. To me, that is not accruals. It's negligence, actually. And I think we should actually deal with that decisively. Because, you know, even a small department like Checkers, they balance every evening. You can't have a department so important having invoices just left in drawers. The other thing is the Department of Public Works. It seems this department is causing a lot of inconvenience to other departments. And I'm suggesting, Chairperson, I think we should call them to understand why they are acting like that. The question of delivery of school material, that is defeating the intention of South Africa to prioritize education. Because if children do not have reading material, how on earth do you expect them to be serious and understand what they are supposed to do? And it's happening a lot. I come from a rural area in Bushbuck Ridge. I usually talk to the youth, and they complain that they are in the streets because they have got nothing to do. I say, why are you not reading your books? They say, we don't have any books to read. And I think that is quite serious. You mentioned on DERCO. I just want to plead with you. Do everything else, but you know, the question of closing some of our embassies should be carefully looked at. I'm saying this because, you know, because of what is happening in the world, Brexit, January 2017, the world has changed. You know, the world has changed. Globalization may not be the same as we know it. We need to be careful about our relations with other states. And we must not shoot ourselves in the foot. So it must be carefully looked at and strategically approached. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Fick. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. A few points that I would like to raise, starting with slide number 8. The issue again about this accruals, which seems to be that I have a different understanding to other people with regards to accruals. It says that accruals were paid in the year 2016-17 for accruals from the year 2015-16. My understanding is that provision should have been made for that expenditure in the year 2015-16. So why it affects the 2016-17 financial year, it's just, I cannot understand. So I just have a problem with the way that is reported. With SASA again, a question here is,
We understand that they've already overspent and indicated here that they will overspend with goods and services. Can we get an update? I know it's a departmental matter, but it will ultimately affect the entire budget, is whether a decision has been made with regards to a service provider for the payment of the grants for the forthcoming financial year, because it might then again be an accrual. On that same slide, Honourable Chair, I just want clarity on this, and it's merely for my understanding. The fact that it's indicated that spending is fairly on track, and then the next sentence it says that it's lower than projected, not either on track or it's lower. So, you know, just clarity on that, if you don't mind, Treasury. Slide number 11. With regards to arts and culture, talks about the delayed invoices from DPW for repairs and maintenance of the National Archives. Now, the total amount of over expenditure is 176.2 million. My question is, of that 176.2 million, how much is related to the repairs and maintenance of the National Archives? Is it the total amount or is it a portion of it? Slide number 13 deals with the EPWP. Now, this comes up from time to time where there is slow spending on EPWP. Now, I'm not saying that I would agree with slow spending anywhere, but especially EPWP. It's criminal. It's the people that need the funds more than anybody else. And now you have underspending or slow spending as a result of delays due to contract negotiations with the implementing agents. Surely that can't be acceptable. It needs sometime, somewhere. It needs to happen where the perpetrators or the guilty parties' action needs to be taken, because ultimately beneficiaries are losing out in this case. And again, we have a situation. Slide number 15. Honourable Chair, it says there that the Department of Water and Sanitation overspending or more spending as a result of higher than projected payments for capital assets. Now, my question on that is, are the capital assets more expensive or were they more capital assets purchased? Because then there's a difference. So you might be getting less for more. I have a similar question regarding that on slide number 17, which talks about the administration program that spent 662.4 million higher than projection, mainly due to higher than anticipated payment for computer services, particularly on the item. Now, again, were more computers purchased or were the computers more expensive? Because my understanding is that we have a procurement system now, a procurement department, where the objective is to ensure that we have benchmark prices for certain items. So we need to see whether that is working and whether it's been implemented. The other statement that is made with regards to revenue shortfall. It's an interesting statement made by Treasury, and I'm just trying to understand it. I understand that service delivery should not suffer, but if your revenue streams are falling short, then surely some adjustment must be made if you cannot afford it, unless we can afford high debt costs, debt service costs, and we can afford to have a debt to GDP ratio of 50%, because that's the situation where we are now. I remember in 2014 when I started, that's one of the issues that I questioned, and that time as the presenter mentioned, that our debt to GDP was about 42%. It's gone up rapidly to 50%. You see, it's okay if your debt service costs are lower, if your interest rates are low, but when you have high interest rates, then it becomes a problem on the level chair. So we need to really decide at what point we're going to stop. Are we going to stop at 50? Are we going to stop at 52? We started years ago at 24 6% of debt to GDP. Because there's other things we can look at, surely. Things of curbing expenditure, as I've indicated, things like corruption and so forth. So we need to look at whether we need to cut our suit to suit our cloth. Two more slides, Honourable Chair, on slide number 17. That's one, sorry, one more slide I've dealt with. On slide number 20, this, again, just I need clarification on this, Chair. The Integrated Financial Management System, which we understand lots of money, and you said it yourself that it's come a long way and lots of money has been spent, and I see for the next 2 years, 2017-18, there's about 130 million budgeted, and then the next financial year, 120 million. You say it's going to be implemented or it's running? Because you made two statements, so I just need to be sure on that. What is it? Is it running? Or because the last time we heard that that will be up and running by the next financial year. So I just need, just if you don't mind, just clarification on what is the status of that. Is it running or is it still going to be rolled out starting the new financial year in June? Thanks, Honourable Chair. That's all I have.
Honourable Malala.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I won't repeat what the other colleagues of mine have asked. But I want to get clarity on, not clarity, on education. You know, this issue on slide number 10, the workbook issue from grade R to grade 9 is very disturbing. You know, yesterday, we received a briefing where we were told that majority of the grade 5 can't read. And I asked a question, what went wrong? And now I have realized that if we are not supplying the materials to the teachers and to the learners, we will end up having such a situation. You have mentioned that we need to have a joint meeting with education with regards to the low spending to the implementation of the school infrastructure backlog. Chairperson, I will propose that even public works, if they can be part. Because education, when they arrived here, they will be complaining about public works. So if really we are inviting Department of Education to come and explain to us, let's have also public works. Chairperson, on slide number 11, the higher education and training, the two universities, are we definitely sure that in the fourth quarter, are they going to utilize the whole money that they were allocated for? The issue of COPTA, slide number 15. Indeed, it is very disturbing to hear that there are departments, national and provincial departments, who are not paying municipalities. Where I'm coming from, Emalahleni. Emalahleni is owing Eskom. And when you ask the officials from the Emalahleni municipalities, they are complaining about this department that are not paying them in such a way that there is a squabble between Department of Health and Social Development because they were using one building and they were not paying accordingly. They are owing the municipality a lot of money. I think this issue needs to be taken very seriously. It's not only Department of Health, but majority of the departments that are there, they are owing municipalities. With regards to the municipalities owing the Water Affairs Department, it's also a problem. You know, it seems as if we're not one government. I think that the Treasurer need to play a serious role here to say everybody must be responsible for his own sins. Because we cannot continue like this as if we are different governments. We can't sort this thing immediately. It needs to be addressed as soon as possible. But these municipalities that are not paying, also they need to be named and shamed. We mustn't wait for too long until there is really a serious crisis, then we'll then jump. Thank you very much.
Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, it's Honorable McLaughlin before you. Go ahead.
Excuse us while we sort out the confusion here. Thank you, Chair. for fear of possibly repeating some of what's been said already, if I could just for clarity in general, when we speak of the projection against the actual, are we talking about what was projected to have been spent within the three quarters ending at the end of the third quarter, or are we speaking about the whole financial year? It's just the three quarters. Okay, thank you. I just wanted clarity on that. On slide 10 altogether here. It seems to me we have a problem in, we try and look at things in isolation, and yet there's never an isolated instance really, because everything overlaps with everything else. What I'm thinking about here is it's been mentioned already, basic education. If you talk to that department, they say, oh, we're having a problem with public works. Just as an example, I quite regularly go into schools in my constituency, and I've not yet gone into a school where the toilets are an absolute nightmare. They're broken, there's water pouring out all over the place, they're blocked, they're clogged, water is a problem, sanitation is a problem, there's a health department problem there because it's a health risk to the children. Who do we blame for that? Who's responsible? Because if you talk to basic education, they'll say, well, it's not really our function. We're here to educate the children. The facility, yes, it falls under us, but it's actually public works. Public works will say, no, it's water and sanitation, because they're the ones who provide the water and are responsible for sanitation. They will say, no, it's the municipality, because they're supposed to sort the thing out. You never get any bottom line, so we never know. Where do we actually park the buck for this? Because the problem doesn't get resolved. The problem remains while everybody's pass it on to the next one and the next one, and the children are suffering because they're the ones who've got to try and live in that situation, and really it's terrible. Try it yourselves. Go into any school and have a look what the toilets look like. It's really appalling. But I just want to know, where do we go to? Who do we say, you're the responsible person? You're the one who's actually supposed to be sorting this out. On slide 13, economic services, rural development and land reform. I noticed that we're talking about slow spending in the registration of these trading account budget. I think it was last year we were told that there was a backlog in the issuing of title deeds to those to whom land had already been granted. But these are people who are entitled to have a title deed. The backlog was 900,000 and some, just short of 1 million title deeds that had not yet been issued. The cost of that runs into billions of rands, just for the conveyancing work to do those title deeds. And it's a major issue, as you know. I mean, land is such a controversial subject. We heard yesterday again in the House people saying there are many, many people in our country who've never seen a title deed. They don't know what it looks like. And there are 900,000 people to whom one is owed, and they don't have them yet. This is surely a major problem. And just to say, oh, slow spending again because of Geometrics Management Services program, in real terms, somebody's butt needs to be kicked because this needs to happen, and it needs to happen urgently. It's something we surely have to address. We can't keep just going round and round the bush. Oh, there's a backlog, and there's this problem and that problem. On a slightly lighter note, environmental affairs, having a problem with contracts, with negotiations, with implementing agents. Is implementing agents another word for labor brokers? Do we have a problem with that? Is that why the EPW people aren't getting what they should? I hope not, because it's going to cause a major problem. Slide 15, COGTA. This is another one of my little bugbears, I'm afraid, because when we look at our situation, our policy as a government is we want to get services to the people. That's our bottom line. We need to increase and improve services to the poorest of the poor, to everybody across the country. The average citizen's relationship or experience of government is that it's local municipality, because that's who he has to deal with, whether it's a pothole or his electricity account or paying his rates and taxes, whatever service it might be, the first call is at your local government office, your municipality. And yet we only give them 9% of our national budget. And we say, sometimes very blithely, well, they must recover the rest from the community. The community must pay rates and taxes, they must pay for water, they must pay for electricity, etc., etc. But every municipality is constrained, because when the economy is not performing, the people who live in that municipality find it harder and harder to pay for the services, for the rates and taxes. On an annual basis, the rates and taxes are increased. Regardless of what the economy is like, the municipality puts them up so that they can try and balance their budget. The profitability of electricity and water goes down all the time because NERSA puts pressure on them. There's pressure from the community to keep the costs down, but the municipality has somehow got to make the books balance. And then we come along and say, oh, well, you haven't really earned your equitable share this year, so we're taking it away from you. We consolidate two towns together, and their equitable share is suddenly cut in half because they only get the equitable share that they previously had for one town, must now cover two. This can't be right. How can we ever improve the services to people if we keep taking away the resources that we're supposed to use in order to improve those services? Surely we need to seriously look at raising the level of grants to municipalities across the board. You know, it's only the metros who get the share of the fuel levy, not the district municipalities, which are a waste of time anyway, but the local municipalities don't get them. District municipalities have no real function. They spend a lot of money on salaries, but they don't actually give any services. Where I come from, the district municipality only provides emergency medical services, and they do the licensing function on behalf of the province. That's the only service they provide. And they employ 900 people to do that at an astronomical salary bill. It's a waste. It's not efficient spending, is my point. Department of Water and Sanitation. I'm glad to see for a change they're spending a bit more than was projected, because they've had their budget significantly cut over the past several years. And it is one of the most important departments we have in government, because water is life, as has been said before. It's the absolute basic service that we have to get to every one of our citizens. And then I get really concerned when I hear that billions are owed to the department by water boards and municipalities, etc. Is there a plan in place? Is the department being assisted to collect the money that's owed? You know, we have a magnificent set of laws in this country for debt collection, but we don't use them. We ignore it, and we try and pussyfoot around and talk nicely and have meetings and what can you do about it. But we do actually have laws with teeth, and we could take serious action, and we could enforce the law and make these things happen, because it can't be right that you just don't pay and you get away with it. And that's what seems to happen across the board. question I have that really we need to assist the municipalities as well, because that's half their problem. They don't get the payments they need from the citizenry, from the other departments, from the provinces. Across the board, people need to be assisted to collect what's owed to them, surely. I mean, as Treasury, you must know this, because if the citizens don't pay their taxes, you've got nothing to spend. So you're efficient there at SARS in collecting the taxes. Can't we make across the board all the departments efficient at collecting what's owed to them? On slide 17, I see that now that there's a lower than projected spending in police, delays in the finalization of transversal contract. I know my colleagues mentioned this as well. It begs the question to me, is there a problem with finalizing transversal contracts? The Office of the Procurement, Chief Procurement Officer, are they capable and competent? Are they actually performing their task? Because it's a problem to me if they're having difficulty negotiating deals that are causing the whole chain across every department's procurement program to be sort of delayed and held back because one other department is not actually achieving its function and performing as it should be. It's just a question I have, but I thought, is it something that we need to look at and find out, is there a problem there? Can something be done about it? Then we say detective services program due to slow spending and compensation for employees, this is due to vacancies. It just raised the question to me again that we say that we're trying to reduce the national wage bill. And we're doing that by not filling vacancies. So any vacant posts that come up, we're encouraging people to go on retirement when their retirement date comes up, all the sort of things to try and retain this wage bill. But we often use it as an excuse as to why we haven't met our spending targets, the fact that there's vacancies that aren't filled, so we can't spend the money because the people aren't there to pay the salaries to. But surely those budgets should then be adjusted accordingly. The budget itself, or the projection, should be adjusted downward to cater for the fact that there are vacancies that are not going to be filled, because we're using it as a sort of gap filler. You know, it's another one of those things where it always has a knock-on effect, because the smaller your wage bill, the smaller your tax return out of those wages as well. So obviously it's a double-edged sword for Treasury, because the smaller the national wage bill becomes, the less your income stream is from taxes. So you've got to try and balance that book as well. But it's just one of those things we're faced with, I know. Outsourced medical services and medical waste removal in defence and military veterans. I have a question there again. I know you mentioned it, sir, in your presentation, but is the Department of Health not somehow supposed to be involved here again? This is what they do, after all, is provide medical services and remove waste removal. But now we're having an outsourced one. Is it outsourced to the Department of Health, or is it outsourced to the public sector? And if so, why are we doing that? Are our own departments not capable again? And then I had a question mark over this one of Landward Defence. Now, Landward Defence says to me, this is in the defence of the country. But the highest spending is for $127 million for homeowners' allowance. How does that defend our country, homeowners' allowance? I'm not sure what this is about. Should have been paid in the previous year. I noticed in the bigger document that we got this morning, fortunately we didn't have a lot of time to look at it, but the explanation there goes further and says, as well as the payment of accruals for mobility packages in brackets vehicles used in operations that should have been paid in 15-16. We have never yet had the Department of Defense here to explain any of the expenditure. And, Chairperson, I really suggest we should, because having been in the military myself at one stage in my life, I know the kind of waste that goes on in the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and it's massive. And I think it's time we had a really serious look at it, because they spend the third biggest amount of money of all the departments, and we never really know what they're doing with it. Well, we know some of it. They're paying housing loans and buying vehicles, but is that what they should be doing? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Madlock.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the presenter for, I think it's the presentation is really improving to cover our concerns in the previous presentation. We appreciate that. On slide number 5, the issue of the social development, that's the under expenditure, I think we need to congratulate the department for that, because it came as a result of uprooting corruption in the department for re-registering the beneficiaries, especially in the child support grant, where there was a problem of the ghost children that were registering that did not come back when they were doing re-registering. I think that under expenditure is really something of good intention to try and keep the issue of the corruption. However, you know, on the particular issues of the receipt and so on, I think it's something that we'll ask in the department sharply, because it's something that needs to, the consequences for that is supposed to be managed or take place. Also on the 10, slide number 10, you see it's, I want to check first on the program 4. There is these delays. You indicated that in the budget that you have passed now, this this grant has been amalgamated. Do you think it's going to yield good results for the expenditure? How does it assist to really deal with the expenditure on this particular item if they are consolidated? And also you indicated on the presentation as a reason for this under expenditure that sometimes is the performance by some implementing agents. What I want to know, what is difficult in replacing underperformers? Maybe, I know that maybe it's a department that can really explain, but maybe as treasury you have an insight of the problem that can lead to the service provider that is failing to provide services to have difficulty in replacing. I really don't take that one, because it's affecting the service delivery, and it's also affecting the future of our children, because we are talking about education. If they don't implement, it also talks to this delays in receiving invoice and the failure to have workbooks, you know, for these grades that have indicated. One really doesn't take this as a reason. You know, I don't know who is really delaying the invoices. Is it a Department of Education or a service provider? Because we need a clarity on that, so that when we engage a department, we know exactly who is the sinner in this particular matter going forward. The page on slide number 11-2, I know that you indicated in your presentation that you issued to all departments that they must try to reduce a wage bill by not filling in the post, which is a concern to us when, as a country, we are having a problem of inequality, unemployment, and as a government, we are not exemplary in filling in the post, because we are saying we are having a triple challenge. Unemployment is one of them, but if we can say we stop employing, I don't think what are we saying to our target to uproot the unemployment as well as the inequality and poverty if we're going to stop employment as a government. Also, when I talk about labor, under labor, you know, this under expenditure also around the issue of the personnel. It's a concern to us. We have got Employment Equity Act that is supposed to be implemented, especially by private sector, because when you look at the designated group in the private sector, you know they are not implementing that particular act. And the labor inspectors, you indicated that they are a big problem, but we are saying they must not continue to employ. You know, to us, as the government is supposed to be exemplary. If you say this is a target, you want the inspectors to implement this legislation, you know, now, no, to follow up on the implementation of the legislation, and you talk about the incapacity because they don't have enough inspectors. I think it's something that maybe when Treasury is giving an instruction, they must also analyze the challenges. You can say, yes, we have to reduce the wage bill, but look at the key areas of government where it's supposed to implement the legislation, like those personnel. I think it's a key. These are critical positions to us, inspectors, labor inspectors, because they really go to private sector where they don't want to cooperate around the issue of implementing employment equity plan. So we'll know, and then the government will have the intervention on that. And also, the colleagues have raised on that one, the issue of the public works and the invoices. I think I agree with the colleague to say that when we call in the Department of Education, they must be part because they are responsible for implementing. You know, they said South Africa works because of public works, you know. So if South Africa works because of them, but at the same time they are hindering the progress around the issue of the implementation and fast-tracking the service delivery, we don't think it's a good thing. I think we'll need to call them and be with them and deal with them once and for all. Slide number 13. Yeah, environmental affairs. I can't agree more with the colleagues that have raised this thing. I don't know what negotiations that I really don't understand, because when you plan, we have got the medium-term expenditure framework now. We go for 3 years. You have got the time for planning if you want to plan and the time for implementation. Why at the time of the implementation you start negotiating? Where was the planning? It's a problem. It's really a problem. We are not spending, we are not giving people service delivery because of the mismatch of planning by the department. You can't tell me that during the time of implementation you start negotiating, because those things, there is a preparation stage, there is planning stage, the actual one, and then the implementation. Really, I don't really understand this thing, and I think the department, because we're going to call some of them, we must really talk to that, because we don't take this thing of what they are doing, negotiating the time of planning. Can I also slide number 15? You know COCTA? It's our great concern. Unapproved rollover. We once asked the Treasury, what is your role on this particular matter? Because we are talking here, the government has prioritized investing in infrastructure, and there is under expenditure. Reason that the there was an unapproved rollover. I don't know whether, because we once get from Treasury to say that if now the planning for that particular project is in a state that it can be implemented, they don't hold on the money. Why do you, when they request the rollovers, because you know the challenge for me, on the ground when you don't approve this, during the IDPs at a local government, they have already announced these things in the communities to say these are the things that we are going to do. All of a sudden now this project is no more continuing. Who is going to be affected is ordinary citizens on the ground. I think you at a technocrat level, really you must sort out those problems that affect the community on the ground, because it's local government. The houses of the councillors are going to be burnt, not of the officials, but the money, because IDP is reported on the communities, they prioritize. When now the money is no more there, it's a problem. I think the Treasury must try and work with those officials, because it stays amongst officials. But when the fire burns, it burns on the politicians. I think these are the things that we are not happy with, and the community at a lower level are being affected. These things of withholding local government equitable share, it affects us as a representative of the community. I think the Treasury need to look at closely and to see how are they going to assist those municipalities, because sometimes it's a capacity level and so on. And the Constitution is clear that the national government and the provincial government must assist the lower sphere of government. But if you can just take and you don't see the programs of assisting those particular lower spheres of government, it's a problem to us. Also, the colleagues have raised this thing of the issue of the planning under higher than projected payments for capital assets. You can see that the planning is not good in government. Because if your planning is good, you can't be surprised by, you know, during the time of implementation, you are now surprised everything goes up or down. It talks to the planning, because, you know, this thing can only happen if there was a delay in the implementation of a project, to say maybe by 2 months, now the prices has escalated. But this thing that just come in, it's something that we are not happy. It talks to the issue of the lack of correct planning by the department. That I think the Treasury can just come closer and assist the department. It's same with the police. That's computer services. The administration program spent 662.4 million higher than projection. Can you see how huge is this thing? Maybe it needs to be unpacked to us to say what happened. Did they put the order for certain computers, or as later on they discovered that they need more than they expected to do? Because I can't believe that it can just be an over expenditure with huge amount of 662 million. You know, it talks to the failure of planning. And also, I don't understand, because we're told that now there is a negotiation of the prices. You know, inspector, chief inspector, procurement, yes. They promised us, and then we're happy. They said now there will be no escalation, unnecessary escalation. They negotiated the price. But this thing does not talk to that, if you can see this one. Because if it were a negotiated crisis in the center, it's supposed not to happen like this to us. That's the way we think. Yeah. Lastly, Chair, Home Affairs. I know. Also, we are not happy about this. Higher than projected expenditure. I don't know how do the planning they do the planning, or maybe because we have got also Statistics South Africa. They know the ages of the people that will be coming, you know, to apply for the IDs, you know, for, I don't know, but we are not happy at the way the things are happening. But lastly, Chair, I can say we appreciate that in the third quarter, we have got 74%. That's what is good. That's what is good. We appreciate they must keep up, you know, spending in accordance with the predetermined planning. But we appreciate that in the third quarter, it's 74% expenditure by the department. They can improve on that. Thank you, Chair.
Let us allow you to respond to the issues.
Thank you very much. Let me ask Randani to take your issues, and Gillian will come in and I'll round off.
Thanks, Dondo, and thanks to the committee. I'll start with a couple of issues raised on security departments. Starting with the transversal contract, what is the issue there? The contract itself had to be tweaked, but now it has been resolved, that problem. The police will be getting their vehicles, so the problem is solved. It was the issue of tweaking the contract. It has been done, and the police will be getting the vehicles. That's on transversal contract. The issue of detectives and slow spending. I will link that with the concern why encourage department not to employ. You will remember, Chair, I think it was in our first quarter engagement, Dondo indicated that given the human resource budget plans, departments were given this year to sort of adjust their human resource requirements. And also in that meeting, he indicated that we're not going to be hammering them because they will be reviewing their establishment and their human resource requirements. And again, I think Dondo is still going to add, talking about this HRBP. You will realize that right from 2008, when we were faced with this crisis, we have been cutting other items, mainly non-critical goods and services, without touching on compensation of employees. And at the time of arriving at a decision, there were some trade-offs, talking to raising tax. How about if departments for now don't fill vacancies given the pressures? Because for all the years, we've not been touching COE. But the long and short of it, on vacancies, this year department, they were trying to come up with a revised establishment and the personnel requirements in the department. Hence, some of the vacancies that we see in the department, just like we highlighted in the first quarter report, because we're doing this for the first time. This human resource budget plans. Homeowners allowance in defense, what is it? You will remember that there was this wage agreement, which also increased home allowances from 900 to 1.2. And when it was increased to 1.2, and there was even a different arrangement, that those ones without owning a house, then it will be saved somewhere. And at that stage, defense wanted the systems to be in place, and they couldn't pay in that particular year. But mainly the home allowance is for, as a result of the wage negotiations, that increased homeowners allowance from 900 to 1,200, if not mistaken. And it should have been paid in 2015-16, and it was only settled in the current financial year. And then coming to the police administration, what happened? Please unpack this. OCPO promised some savings. In this case, we can get the details to unpack the 662, but most of the time, this is mainly within the space of, it's not the procurement of computers. It's goods and services, the project done by CETA, and most of the time CETA is ahead of schedule. Hence this overspending in the third quarter. It's not the purchasing of computers. And then we can unpack the details, exactly what is it that adds up to 662. And then OCPO, I know that the OCPO, one of the projects was around the cell phones. I think that's the little that I know. I don't have further details, but on cell phones, I know that they've managed to negotiate some contracts. They're beginning to see some savings on cell phone. So the item in police, it's not under capital, it's under goods and services. These are the projects which are done by CETA, just like projects on infrastructure done by DPW. Let me touch on the issue of public works. I think it also, to a certain extent, touches on CETA because there's sort of a mandated monopoly that a department will go via these departments in procuring certain services. With public works, like for instance, the security departments, they are the biggest clients of public works. And on Friday, we will be meeting with the security departments, and we anticipate the challenges that they're going to be highlighting. I think one of the challenges is to do with the mandate. Departments, they sit with the money, and then public works execute the mandate on behalf of the department. And what the department says is that sometimes there are delays, whereas they can take a different route. We will request the assistance of the committee, because I think every year, in most of all our reports, we always come with the reason delays by public works, delays by CETA, delays by public works, delays. And these are, it's in law that public works is the custodian of these properties. They will do X, Y, Z. Like, for instance, the Department of Defense, they are having what I can refer to as a mini DPW, Defense Works Formation, where they maintain their own buildings. And in 1 year, we had an agreement between Public Works and Defense to say these funds which were earmarked for maintenance by Public Works, Defense can take it and do maintenance themselves. So we're at the mercy of Public Works, with Public Works being ready to sort of agree to say, okay, department, they can do it themselves. But on the department side, it's frustrating. Like, you go to the court, they tell you that they cannot fix the aircon, they are waiting for Public Works. I think the engagement with the committee, Public Works, Education, and these other major stakeholders, I think it will assist, because this is a mandate by Public Works, and departments, they are frustrated. But on Friday, we're having a meeting to discuss some of these issues. But at some point, we'll be stuck with the mandate. I'm not sure as to whether I've left anything out. More computers, I've addressed that. Transversal contracts, detectives, budget should be adjusted. I think that this talks to the vacancies within detective services in police that I've addressed, which is part of these human resource budget plans. I think I've covered most of the issues raised. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I just want to comment on a few comments that were made by the Honourable Members. With regard to DIRCO, we take note of the caution by the member saying that we should carefully look at the issue of closing missions. I think with DIRCO, there's a real concern because I think 80% of DIRCO's budget is susceptible to exchange rate fluctuations. And it has become unaffordable for the fiscus, and it also impacts on the expenditure ceiling set by the National Treasury. But there is other ways that DIRCO can also look at reducing the expenditure. So they're currently looking at the properties overseas, and also in terms of the number of members in the different missions before actually looking at closing the missions. But I think it's also important to look at the number of missions and the relationship between the strategy and your larger missions and your medium-sized missions and your smaller missions to see whether they can actually implement some saving measures. With regard to public works, I fully support the recommendation of the member that we should get public works in with the departments that public works impact on. Because I think public works started with a turnaround strategy 3 years ago. And they go through different stages of the turnaround strategies. So they started with the initial phase where they identified quick wins, and then now they're in the stabilization phase. But in actual fact, you don't see the impact of the turnaround on the on the client departments. So we still have the problem. So I think it's very important that we have the conversation with Public Works and also the department to see if the problems can be resolved. With regard to Home Affairs, I think the problem with the Home Affairs budget is that the budget for the enabling documents they only receive during the adjustment budget every year. So there's a mismatch between the expenditure on the enabling documents to your government printing works and the actual budget allocated to them. So we're actually looking at the problem to see whether we can allocate the money before the adjustment budget and to make that allocation in part of the budget of the department, because otherwise you're going to sit with a mismatch that they have to spend on the enabling documents during the year, but they only get the money for it at the after the adjustment budget, which is December or January. So that's a problem we're having. So you always have the overspending in public works for the quarters because of the budget they are not allocated for them for the enabling documents. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair. I think thank you very much for all the questions, and I think it assists us to improve this document further. I think what I picked up right at the beginning is important so that members don't get confused in terms of what we mean when we say over or under projection. So we should actually, if it's quarter three, we should actually have a column in our presentations of column of quarter three versus the projections for quarter three and the 74, including the over and under in terms of our own projections for the full financial year. Then we can make a quick assessment in terms of whether the department, because we will know in terms of where we see that, and but for the purpose of quarter three, all you see is up to quarter three. You don't see the full picture for the full year, because then you will, at any given point in time, be able to assess whether this department is likely. So we'll have to improve on that front in terms of how we, as we move along. I can't overemphasize and agree with all members around the issue of planning and budgeting. See, the theory of planning and budgeting and execution, all of these things go together. If you go to your basic budgeting course, they will tell you about planning, execution, and monitoring, and so on. So all of these goes together. I think it's important that, and that's the point I was trying to make earlier on, that even before we make allocations here, we should actually make sure that there's a plan in place, and we should interrogate the plan. And I know one of the reforms that we've introduced in the last few years was around the submission by departments of procurement plans, because the procurement office, including in provinces, by the way, are able to check and synchronize the procurement vis-a-vis the kind of budget allocations made. So I think it's important, and it's something that moving forward then should go across, not only certain departments, but across the whole of government, that should actually ensure that it happens. HRBP plans, human resource business plans, we insisted on the HR business plans after, through the budget process of last year when we went to Minister's Committee on the budget. And the Minister's Committee, we went to the Minister's Committee and say, we need 10 and 15 billion rand worth of cuts in compensation because we are not balancing. As part of the budget process that was passed last year, we went to them and said, we are not balancing our numbers. Provinces have proven and confirmed that over time they've been decreasing their personal budget so that they stay. The reason, by the way, is not because we're cutting jobs, or it's simply for your revenue to equal your expenditure. That's the difficulty that we continuously have. So what we did to the department is, unlike going to you and saying, we need you to cut budget by so much, and we need so much from you, we then gave the department the opportunity for themselves to come up with this HRBP, this business plan, to say, for us to remain within budget, for us to be able to still fulfill our mandates, this is the plan that you put in place to remain within this expenditure personal budget that we have. So it was a balancing thing that we have to do, all again as a result of very limited budget. And we did that across, as an example, in the Treasury, because we had to, as management now in the Treasury, responding to public finances instruction, we had to, as a Treasury, we knew that we had to relieve about 120 plus posts and say, you know, where and how do you get this when you obviously need people to do certain tasks? The DG of the Treasury then, you know, set up a small committee of two DDGs and himself and say, every position that is becomes vacant needs to be motivated to this committee. We suffered as divisions now in different departments within the Treasury to say, if a person resigns, you cannot fill because you either have to remain within budget. So in a way, it was tightly controlled, and I guess most departments had to do that in order for them to remain within. Because if you don't do something as drastic as that, you have a challenge because you're going to overspend your competition budget. You're not going to remain within the appropriations budget that was appropriated last year, 2016 budget. You'll have a problem. So it is a continuous balancing act. On one hand, you cannot be seen as government to lead the front of retrenchments, etc., etc. But the reality of the situation we self find ourselves in is that you have to do that balancing act between revenue and expenditure all the time. And this is a call that I think at some stage we have to make, because we have to decide, do you fill positions? In our case, for instance, in my division, I had an option. I had to ask myself the following question. Do I fill in positions that are admin-type positions or technical expertise analyst kind of budget analyst positions? So I had to weigh that all the time, and I think that's a call that we have to make, and that's a call across the whole of government. The example I gave about Home Affairs was a classic one, because we know immigration officers are critical. We know labor brokers are critical. Do you not fill those for a specific task, or how do you balance it out? So it's a continuous thing that I think, but I take note of what Dr. Mazala is saying in terms of weighing the options that are available at any given point, you know, in terms of what do we do. Community Works Program in COCTA, I think we have been discussing with COCTA around CWP, because clearly there is a challenge there in terms of the functioning. If you look at the numbers, 2.4 billion, only 50.4% was spent. If you go deeper now in this program, which is critical because it is actually expanding employment, it's expanding services, ensuring people on the ground in rural and urban area, townships, ensure that some service delivery happens. But then the program is only performing at 50.4% to date, which is a bit worrying. And that's one of the programs that are a bit worrying here. But I know from an auditing point of view and from where we see the Treasury, we've been engaged with COCTA to say, you should be able to account so that the contracting of this community workers is in line, and then you don't have an issue with the Auditor General later on. So it's ongoing between us and COCTA, and it's something that I think we need to clear, and will be, and I indicated even as early as last night, I indicated to the DG of the acting DG in COCTA, and I mentioned to him that we will be more than ready and prepared to assist through the Government Technical Advisory Center to ensure that we can actually arrest the challenges that we find in this program. You explained about Home Affairs. OCPO, we shouldn't forget, honourable members, that the OCPO is fairly new, if you think about it. I mean, the office came into operation some 2-3 years ago. Systems had to be put in place. We had to start putting money in there to ensure that there's capacity, because we relied on existing people within the Treasury and to get more expertise. And they performed well, as you may be aware, around some of the new projects, new plans, the central supplier database, the reforms that they've introduced, etc. So it hasn't been easy. But yes, there is room, obviously, to ensure that the transversal contracts are addressed in a way that the committee is recommending, and it's something that we need to ensure that we improve further. DERCO is an interesting case, because, and I agree, it's important. I mean, what's happening, the right-wing movements have taken charge of the world, to put it that way, and how we have to be strategically, and when we are alive to the issue, we on top of that. And the importance you've overemphasized, I think, honourable member. But the challenge that we still have is that go a little bit further. Don't touch some of these areas. Don't close some missions. Check which ones, if you can rationalize some, yes. But in DERCO, you've got
some big animal, they're called Foreign Service Dispensation, FSD policy. The FSD policy, Chair, it's in the system, it's been there for years, but we've been challenging the department to relook at this policy framework. What it says is that if I'm posted in the U.S., as an example, and I'm a Deputy Director General, my salary in South Africa will continue being paid. And then I will continue to get another salary in the U.S. Because I've got free accommodation, which is fully furnished, and the type of house or accommodation I get in the U.S. should fit my level as a Deputy Director General. And it, to an extent, I hope it has changed by now, to an extent that it would not, and especially when you look at other attaches, whether it's a DTI attache or a defense attache, it would take account of the fact that I'm senior and that I must get a particular size of house, square meterage, irrespective of whether I'm married or not. Now, imagine if I'm single, all I need is an apartment, could even be a one-bedroom, I don't need a mansion to live in. But our policy framework is such that it will allocate, the system will naturally allocate a house for me, which is maybe a certain type of square meter in a certain area, with my children will be paid for fully in a school, I'll get the fully furnished house, all of those things. Now, we're saying it has become very expensive for us to maintain the system. It's important that we relook at that. So, and maybe this slide we must bring to you in the next round, just as an illustration. DERCO and Parliament and one, two other departments, among the highest per capita spending, we spend about 974,000 rand per person in DERCO, vis-a-vis, I think in Treasury the average is about 700 rands or so per person. As an example, or in Minister Administrative Services Department, your COCTA President, etc. DERCO and Parliament is among the highest in terms of all 40 or plus votes. So the challenge is, if per capita spending per employee is that, it needs to be reduced, because it's the full cost. The full cost will include missions, etc., etc. But so, in particular, we say, look at your FSD policy. Let's review it. If it means engaging with it, let's do that, so that we kind of make it align a little bit. And we're not saying people should not earn, but it's important that we should take into account that some of the realities that you find ourselves in. And obviously the properties that we own overseas, how do you rationalize it? There was an issue as an example of buying a property in New York and how expensive it was. So it's ongoing. Where at any given point in time, we're trying to make sure that we remain within spending, acceptable spending limits, but still be able, which is important, still be able to perform some type of service and provide some service delivery, and that's not affected. Honorable accruals, I agree with you. I think it's important that we are checking, you are right. In a way, it's unacceptable that there's invoice in the drawers. It's unacceptable. We have to ensure that at any given point in time, bills are being paid. And that's why I mentioned an issue about 30-day payments. And it's something that I think moving forward we should continue ensuring that it happens. Now, we can give you information about the delays. And I don't have those breakdowns, but around arts and culture and the 176 million, as to what component of that is repairs and maintenance. And in writing through the committee secretariat, we can make that available. I agree how you put it, that it's criminal for our EPW program not to be functioning. Actually, it's not acceptable, and we must ensure that we encourage our colleagues to actually move and make sure that it happens. Department of Water and Sanitation, it's not that we paid more or computers in terms of example, but it's more that we not more was purchased, but it's what's spent in the quarter. That's why I said it's important that we give you budget vis-a-vis third quarter spending vis-a-vis the budget or the projections that we made for the third quarter. So we'll clear that moving forward. The big issue for us is revenue shortfalls. When we say revenue shortfalls, it's just a simple mathematical calculation. What you're expecting in terms of tax revenues vis-a-vis what you're spending. So I'm trying to simplify it like that to say, if revenues fall, you must then adjust your spending accordingly and ask tough questions. By the way, this is what we've done in the last couple of years. The Minister of Finance previously has mentioned issue about haircut and how, you know, whether you can call it cheese cop or whatever. But at some point, we've been cutting down on spending. But we did not cut programs that have got impact on service delivery. We have been cutting off what you can call fat in the system. And we did, by the way, succeeded, if you think about it. Our procurement office was actually pushed. Right now, I know we are saving almost 500 million in the cell phone contract. That's transversal contract. A few years ago, on the transversal contract in the ARVs, we saved about 2 billion. So we've been, when you look at the gains that we've made, despite the tough economic conditions that we find ourselves in, I think we are making this balance, but still ensuring that we don't impact on service delivery interventions that we're making. Because that will be austerity. That's why I say to people, Chair, that we are not in that mode. We are just in a normal cost-cutting mode. We are not in an austerity environment where, like it happened in the UK before and so on. We want to avoid, because austerity has got an impact on growth. And then you'll have a problem. It's a basic. Once you start being coming with austerity measures, it will impact growth, and then you have a big problem. But as we move along, we just simply ask ourselves constantly, is our revenue enough? If it's not enough, we want to borrow more. We want to keep it, so we have to slice off a little bit of our expenditures. And the challenge that I'm having, and I told the students as we've been negotiating with them in the last few months, and because the students are saying, but there's corruption in the system, and the Minister of Finance mentioned about 20 billion worth, you know, corrupt. It could be, but we cannot share budget on the basis of stolen money. Money is stolen. It's going to be stolen. So we have to budget with what we have. And we cannot say, because if we have service delivery challenges, we must, there's so many people who are stealing money from the system, and we've got, so we cannot do that. But we obviously have to look at revenue, expenditure, and work on this basis whilst trying to improve efficiencies in terms of our spending. And then that we'll continue doing. IFMS, Gillian, can you come back to it once I'm done? On the IFMS, because I think the question was direct in terms of what is the status currently? Where are we? You know, just come back to that in terms of explaining. Honourable Malana, you mentioned about the workbooks, about clarity in majority of grade 5s cannot read. It is true. I mean, these are the steps that we know. And again, the worst thing is when it's all because our delivery mechanisms are not in place, and we should have perfected this long time ago. And I think again, in this conversation with education, which I think is going to be important, Chair, that we should bring this up, because it is the education sector on the ground who should actually be making sure that there's delivery. It's not an issue about budget. It's about there is a budget. It's a matter of just contracting or making sure that someone prints the books and deliver them on time in December, well before the schools begin in January. And yes, and I agree, we did indicate public works must come to the party. And in terms of infrastructure spending on higher education and capital payment for capital assets, I think what I think is important is to list, because mostly will be also in terms of just transfers, by the way, that it's come from the broader subsidy of universities, and again, it's an issue as to when and how do you transfer that. Municipalities not being paid, it's a call that I think we make all the time. If you remember the Eskom issue that we had previously, when Eskom, we had to get Eskom in and get municipalities to sign agreements with Eskom, and it's continuing now, and this time around it was directly between Eskom and the municipalities. Because, as I said, it's a last resort. We wouldn't want to be withholding shares, because withholding equitable share has got detrimental effects, as you said. But I think it is something that's available in our system.
and how we use it as we as withholding. Obviously, we should ensure that it doesn't impact on service delivery. But the real challenge here is municipalities not paying for services that they receive themselves, whether it's to the water, whether it's to, because Eskom provides electricity to the municipality. The municipality sells, maybe even at a premium, but they don't pay. So it's the same as water, you know. So it's always a challenge that I think we must ensure that we constantly, and we have to play a role. I agree with the committee that we have to try and come in the middle and facilitate. There was an issue as to, is Treasury now becoming a debt collector of some kind? Should we be playing that role or shouldn't we be playing that role? It's an ongoing tussle among ourselves to how exactly should we intervene. But I think the point that we have, we've got the lever that we can move. I mean, I always tell my team that I can be that person who writes that letter to the Department of X to say, pay the municipality, pay this, you know, we can do that. And when we do it, sometimes it happens, and I think we must continue doing it. We shouldn't stop doing it. The situation in schools, I think we have to change our delivery mechanisms, Honourable McClarkson, in terms of how we. I mean, it's true. You obviously do a lot of oversight visits into schools and some health facilities. The state of some of our schools, and actually, at the end, it's a maintenance issue. The school is built, it's new, everyone is happy. After a few years, it starts to deteriorate now. But you have the department. At what role do we change? How do you ensure that we expand? Because also it's also about empowering local people, because it's local people who are plumbers, it's local people who are, you know, and they can. We should find a mechanism, and we should challenge the Department of Education how best to actually ensure that if a toilet is broken or a window is broken or a bulb is missing, someone should be able to fix it. How do we fund schools? What norms do we use and so on? So it's always a challenge, but I think. And I'm happy that the committee is raising it in this fashion so that it actually remains on our radar. And yes, I mean, the DIS office, it's something that we've raised with the department, continue raising that. I did mention something about Cocktown, how it's important that, you know, we don't have a choice. It's how the 9% budget going to municipalities or to local government, it's the choice that Chair, through the Appropriation Committee and many other committees, is a choice that we made here. And I'm happy that here's an opportunity now, the new budget has been passed. We've got an opportunity. When I say we, it's you actually, honorable members. You have an opportunity to look at this budget, configure in a way that you deem fit, so that if it's so decided that 15 or 10% of this budget go to municipalities, obviously with reasons, and the Parliamentary Budget Office can do the necessary research, and then we would obviously be more happy to actually take guidance from you. But in terms of the current framework, that's what we have. And it's true, there are some municipalities who their revenue base is almost zero. They cannot sustain on their own, and it will continue being an issue as we move forward, as we grow as a democracy, as to how do we address, especially your rural municipalities and small municipalities whose revenue base is very, very low, how do we assist them moving forward? Now, Dr. Randella, you did not mention anything about military health services vis-à-vis the Department of Health. So I think it's important, just go back to that point, and if you can just help the committee, because you've got this military service, and how do they contract? Do they contract with health, or do they contract with... I think it's important that we respond to that. Just prepare yourself to talk to that. Okay, I did mention about the feeling of... no doubt, I mean, Employment Equity Act has to be... There's no excuse. If it means going an extra mile in terms of reconfiguring, you know, the kind of budget allocations for labor, let it be, because if there's an area and the department is of the view that they are lagging behind in ensuring that companies are adhering to this, we cannot not do
we cannot not do. But again, guidance we will get from the department. Chair, I think I've addressed most of the issues, because some of them were repeating and it was just general issues that I tried to limit right at the beginning. Unless if, and I also noticed in my notes here, I wrote somewhere where we need to in writing come back to you with information that's not very detailed. But I guess we should be able, together with the secretariat, be able to compare notes and be able to come back to the committee in case we miss some basic information that's needed. And insofar as SASA is concerned, and that was one question, whether the contract, I think that issue is ongoing now. You know, I don't think I'm in a position to, on behalf of the department, to say. But what I know is that the department has engaged the process. They are engaged in the process, and we obviously are with them. We've been engaging with them, and we've been giving them our advice in terms of how to proceed. But as I think we've indicated through our minister previously, that it's the sole responsibility lies with the Minister of Social Development and SASA in particular. But we would see a situation where grants, grants are paid, and I think we've said that, and that what we've also said is that we should just ensure that whatever new negotiations, contracts, or any arrangement that's entered into takes note of the account amount of allocations made, so that we're not taken for a government, it's not taken for a ride in terms of administrative budgets set aside to make sure that grants happen on the first of April. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Thanks, Dondo. Sorry, I missed one on outsourced services to the private sector by the defense. It's in a situation where you've got a soldier who goes to a military hospital and you find that there is no expertise or equipment or whatever, and then directly the person goes to, they refer the person to a private hospital. And I think I should also highlight this to the committee that we expect spending on these outsourced services to go down, because what's happening is that at 1 mil in Pretoria, they are refurbishing different floors there to provide for all these equipment that they don't have. I've been there myself doing on-site visit. I've seen what they're doing. And part of the project is to bring apparently a pharmacy which is outside, to bring it on-site, including additional space for theater and all of that. So going forward, we expect this to go down. One thing that I'm not quite sure of is on a waste remover. It's something that we'll explore with defense to get the details and why can't it be done maybe by health, as they are also doing it themselves. So we'll explore. But on this other one of outsourced services is where a department refer a patient to a private hospital. Thanks.
Management, but also national treasury, you need to monitor the money.
Thank you. Sorry. It's a partnership, meaningful partnership that will, firstly, they agree on a modus operandi, and then the feedback up to the principals by different structures. Because if you meet the different pillars, they meet, and then this pillar says this pillar has not, in a meeting, it should impact negatively on this one, and in the next meeting you want to improve so that he's not blamed for failing to deliver on his mandate. I think where we must insist on partnerships and those modus operandi, and then you receive them so that you can use that to monitor the implementation. Late transfers, they haven't worked for us. Now, that's fine. I think that's all that I would want to talk about, collaboration strategy. Yeah, to me it will be partnership or collaboration strategy so that we monitor each other and make sure that my brother, my neighbor, becomes neighborly and does what a neighbor is expected to do. And then at the end, we make an impact. Thank you.
Any responses?
Yes. No, thanks very much. I think what Honorable Kosa is raising, these are very, I'm just thinking she reminds me when she was MEC. These are the kind of things they would expect us in the Budget Council and Treasury to do. But I'm saying this because, Honorable Members, it is important to understand where, maybe let me take 2 minutes to explain this, Chair. In terms of the emphasis in terms of our reform as a Treasury from the 90s, we because of the challenge we had in province, we had to strengthen the area that was looking after province and municipalities, in particular provinces, because of the huge deficits. Now, some of the systems that we have built in terms of our oversight role in provinces can answer all of these questions, by the way. The units is there. Now, if you have to quickly then move over to our oversight role, as dictated to by the PFMA or Constitution, whatever, over national departments, and the focus that we had in the last 10, 15 years on national departments, you'll pick up that we found wanting to an extent as our oversight over national departments, including the system that we've developed. Now, it is natural because the IYMs are provided on the 15th of every month. A consolidation report is done quickly. Now, I'm telling you inside, Chair, the challenges that we have is that we still, by the way, developing that capability. Yes, I'm just saying, and it's unfortunate that our history just took time in terms of our own reform. So, to your point, for the first time in our budget documentation, and I just wanted to refer members to what we said in the budget review as a demonstration of what I'm talking about. Page 55 of the latest budget review of 2017. Page 55 says, it's improving spending efficiencies. There's a side point that we're making there. Efforts to strengthen in-year monitoring of appropriate funds are also being stepped up, as discussed in Chapter 3. In Chapter 3, there's a section there talking about strengthening budget execution, improve in-year monitoring, public entities. Remember, the chair in the other room, in the old assembly when we were there, you challenged us as a committee on public entities and information, and we were left wanting. We didn't have it because our systems weren't developed. In recognizing the kind of engagements that we have with you as a committee, we then saw the need of stepping up our efforts in our budget execution. We've never had it, and I'm pushing the team here to say you should be able to answer me on anything like I used to when I used to work with provinces. Those years, anyone would ask me, I would, at the top of my head, know the number, because that's what I did. That's all I did. And I think as one division and one, or some division, the Treasury were developing, some were lagging. So it is our own history as a country as we develop, because it's not easy in 20 years to have just been experts on all of these things. But it's something that I think we have to do. In answering all your questions, for instance, as a start, the IFMS module, IFMS system that we've been talking about, will be able to give us that, by the way. This is what has been promised, that IFMS in itself has got various modules in one. Your procurement is there, so you go to the procurement in the same module, so you're able to generate reports, you're able to generate, see what you call, Honorable Professor, delayed invoice, you're able to see what has been committed immediately. Currently in the basic accounting system, the best system that you're using, you're not able to see that. The Vulindlela system that is part of our system, it's history information that we use to analyze. You don't have a life system that you can see where we sit as national treasure. So we think, as part of our reform, and that's why we're pushing for this IFMS, we think we should be able to be on top of the accruals, the payment, as part preparation, by the way, to move from a cash-based accounting system, because that's also another challenge that we have. We are on a cash basis. Our accounting system, if I have to put my accountant's hat there, then it's not easy to have real information. And it is an old story, you're right. And our monitoring unit, and by the way, again, as part of our history, we, Department of Monetary Evaluation came. In the past, this used to be a function by the treasuries, all 10 of us, whereby you are able to give information and understand the impact immediately. But again, the impact now, in terms of the impact of the service, of the money that you've appropriated, you can only saw it later when DPME steps in, and we're not in that space. So as much as if you look at this grant I was talking about the National Infrastructure, Education Infrastructure Grant, they say they will be able to deliver 519 schools over the MTF. This is what the budget, new budget document says. But for me, as a treasury, to understand or to know, I'll be relying on those who then do monitor, which is DPME. So again, it's how we engage and collaborate in order to have that last column. But it's not impossible. All I'm saying is that it is possible, because how they are structured, it makes our lives easy, actually. They've got, what do they call them, outcome facilitators, responsible for all of these areas that we are. So each one, there's a counterpart in DPME. And I'm pushing them that in a budget execution, that's why I make sure that it's here. In the budget execution and monitoring, you playing an oversight role, that you haven't been, okay, I'm telling them in our meeting, you haven't been doing properly in the last while. Know your outcome facilitator. Let that outcome facilitator be your friend. Be able to know what, then you can provide information like that. So let it be a challenge, and it's a challenge I'm getting from Chair, from you, to say, in our next report, let's see what type of, I don't know how possible it is for quarter four, but we'll try, how possible it is to try and start having information that is service delivery oriented. Because it's there. It's there in the E&E, the thick book. It's there in terms of targets and what they, basically the activities that they are going to perform in order to deliver. You know how many police stations are going to be built in the new year, don't you? Yes, we know that. So it is important that you should be able to say, in your payment for capital assets, after quarter three or quarter four, out of 50 police stations that you said you're going to deliver, we built 10. Then the committee can ask, what happened? So I think let's try it, and it's a challenge that I'm taking on, and I think we should be able to. Just one thing, just on the emergency fund, yes, it's a contingency reserve, but it is not for purposes, as honourable member you have put it, though we can decide to do that. It's up to cabinet if it need be. That it's contingency in nature. But ideally, once you do that, and it's how far you can go. As an example, water trading entities are being owed at least $4 to $6 billion. Yes, no, it's not small money. Now, if the water trading entity says we are being owed $4 or $5 or $6 billion, and we'll hear the details on Friday, and they've got a list of top 40 people who owe them. All municipalities, all water boards, all in the water trading entity. Now, if it's an emergency, we say let's plug the gap. It means you're plugging out 4 billion out of the condition. You have a problem. If it's ESCOM or the water board saying we are cutting off water, because that's what they were saying, we'll stop. Imagine now if water is cut to city of Cape Town or Tswane because they are owing. There's going to be disaster. So, but I think the challenge I'm hearing the committee putting on us is that play your role. Reposition yourself and your influence in the whole system to ensure that those who obey, whether it's a department or public works. So I think let's. But we haven't been sitting and not doing anything. Obviously, we have been. There's been a couple of letters that I write. There's been meetings. This thing, I went to FOSAT, Forum of South Africa's Directors General. I went there to say, can any of you sitting around the table talking to these DGs and say, DGs, you are owing ESCOM, you are owing
you're owing, I mean, Municipality X. So there's no excuse, and I think it's important that we come to the party, and as I say, IMY reports, we'll have to strengthen our engagement in terms of the kind of information that you want. DHET, there's no excuse. I mean, if payment budgets are there, they must be spent, and I think, you know, as part of our engagement with the department, that's something that we must do, including the fact that there's no water. It is between the Department of Water and Sanitation and the Department of Education, by the way, and it's always an issue. Same as if you look at informal settlements or informal areas in urban cities. Where do they, is it the Department of Human Settlements or is it which one with Water and Sanitation responsible for sanitation? If it's school transport, is it the Department of Transport that's providing scholar transport or is it the Department of Education? And we interacted in our post-budget discussions last week. There was a student who engaged with us and said, my sister walks long distances in the Eastern Cape. There's no buses. It's like 5 kilometers every morning. And, you know, what happened? And then she was, I mean, like 14, 15-year-old, say my sister. And I'm thinking if she's 14 or 15, the sister might be 7 or 8, if you think about it. Now, when you check, the issue is still in the department, between the Department of Education and the Department of Transport in providing this. Even our policy framework says that. But the challenge is always that taking responsibility and actually ensuring that departments do what they have to do. And that's where I think in some cases it goes beyond us as a treasury just to ensure that those basic, because the budget in most in cases, instances will always be there. I like the idea of a partnership. Maybe colleagues, that's what we must explore in our own, you know, in informing other colleagues. Because it goes beyond that, just as a partnership framework. It's ensuring that departments have got a social contract with each other around issues that they have to do. That is more than. And then it's available, and then we can actually engage with it. And it's the same, before you came in, Chair, I was explaining around the challenge that we got from the same committee around what do we have to do in terms of looking at Parliament and its budget and so on. And I said, we took that forward, and there's a protocol agreement that we're going to have to sign between ourselves and the 9+1 Parliament legislatures with the treasuries around issues of budgeting, monitoring of the legislature budgets, if you think about it. So in this era, it's important that we think of, and I think about you saying, come up with innovative ways of exercising your budget oversight role. And that's the challenge I think we are getting from you today. To say, it's good to just do the normal, give us normal information, but you have to step up your game in the way that you engage as a sector, as treasuries, in terms of the kind of work that you do. And I think it's fair of you to be able to asking us of that, so that we kind of step up our game and not just do the usual things that we used to do over the years. But still, obviously, within reasonable limits and within the applicable laws, and not overextending our role, which I think is important, because we also don't want to be seen to be overstepping our role, because our role is pretty clear as dictated to in the PFMA and the Constitution. So, Chair, thank you very much. I think, you know, from where we sit, it looks like, Honorable Chair, I did address all of the concerns questions that, in issues that Honorable Posa raised. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know, somebody remarked a couple of days ago that money might not be a problem necessarily in the country. In other words, there might not necessarily be a shortage of money, but the question is how you deploy it and how you demand returns in the form of outcomes in our situation, in the form of tangible service delivery to the people. That's the first thing. But secondly, in the form of economic growth and job creation, which is so critical. So no cent must go to waste, one. Two, no cent must be spent in 2017, which was supposed to be spent in 2015-16. That's the accrual story. Because as that happens, you certainly are affecting the next budget. Meaning you did something wrong in the previous budget. And that something wrong might be a whole lot of things. And so it goes on and on and on. We're worried as well. There are departments here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them, underspending by over R1 billion. Whether that is because of delayed invoices or whatever else is simply not acceptable. You may understand an underspending of a couple of millions, but from 500 million to well over R1 billion, that I think cannot be accepted. Because it just simply says, on the priorities of government, there's something not happening. It then says, what this says is that the National Department collects revenue, deploys it to departments, has got to monitor the spending and the outcomes. On our part as Parliament, it says we must step up oversight. And Parliament and National Treasury have got to really rethink the way in which we are doing things. Because to an extent, we are allowing departments to go to do as they please. We are allowing provinces and municipalities to do as they please. Because they understand National Treasury will collect revenue. They will get it in the form of equitable shares and grants and so on. Departments will get their own budgets, we'll vote for them here in Parliament. And then we don't tighten the screws on what they do with the money. So it's going to be critical that we really get to understand the role that National Treasury and Parliament have got to play, together with DPME. Because unless these three really do get down to serious business, we will, as Honorable Posa was saying, we get the story of all over again. Invoices not submitted on time and therefore not paid on time. We get the same story, underspending, wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, etc. and so on. Some departments improve on their work and then regress. I'm raising these things so that we begin to realize that it's not just a question of meeting like this and receiving a report, a quarterly report from National Treasury. It's a question of how we collaborate together with DPMP and Parliament in ensuring that this country indeed moves forward. We cut down on wastage, we increase on service delivery, and more importantly, on job creation and economic growth. So there are certain things that, because I don't even know whether, for instance, you are able to say to departments, look, if you underspend, we can allow underspending up to this much, but no further. And if you do, then this is the kind of reaction you must expect. I don't know whether you have something that says we can allow you overspending up to this point, but beyond that, we will not allow you. If you do, this is the kind of reaction you must expect. Because your overspending means by the end of the year, you will not have money to address your commitments. We have seen departments underspending first three quarters. In the last quarter, boom, every cent is spent. And that goes unchallenged. And it continues on and on and on and on. Somewhere a stop must be put. So it's critical that we also understand why we meet like this and the role that we all have to play in ensuring that there are certain things that must just change. Now, having said that, let me suggest that we've almost exhausted the question. And thank you, National Treasury, for the responses that you have, for the presentation and the responses that you have presented to the committee. We would like you to be able to take yes, another proposal.
Yes, no. It was more of a general response on all proposal because I said it's blurred in terms of the responsibility. The water department will be piping water through to a township, as an example, or a village. And then the school infrastructure itself is a responsibility, therefore, of the Department of Education. Now, the department then, should they go outside the schoolyard to get water, or when the school is being delivered, is it, because it's delivered within a locality, which water sanitation is responsible for, department for water. So the school as it's being delivered, is it then delivered with obviously water connections to the mains? So it's blurred in that sense. Because when you go to the Department of Education, they'll tell you it's water. And when you, depending as to what the conversation, like when you speak to water and sanitation, they'll say, we are not responsible for schools or what's happening in the schoolyard. So it's always a blurred environment. But the reality is that it's the Department of Water and Sanitation in terms of water, delivering water and sanitation to a locality where the school is located.
That issue was raised. Members will remember when we went to the Eastern Cape. We talked about integrated planning between the affected departments, education, water and sanitation, energy for electricity, roads, access to the schools, etc., and so on and so on. Even sports and recreation with the sporting facilities for the schools, all of that, we raised that issue very sharply. And we would be very worried if, and our reports tell that particular story, we would be very worried if that is still continuing, that a school gets built here, there is no access road, no water, no sanitation, no electricity, no sporting facilities, nothing. And so it raises a question around integrated planning. If Department of Education is planning a school here, does it have a conversation with the other departments that must provide all of those services, or it just builds and keeps quiet? So that's the question that we must do. And what happens to the budget, to the money budgeted for those particular services? So this is the question we must really attend to. The same goes for clinics and hospitals, for instance, on all of these things. Thank you very much.
I think it talks to the same issues: planning, budget execution, evaluation, and monitoring. The same issues. I think planning, because it must take all of those. And I think in our budget engagement, especially now that you're going to start with the next budget process, even the post-budget bilaterals with the department, we should continue raising these things. Thank you.
Go through our minutes. We have the 15th, the 17th, the 21st, 23, and 24th. We all got that? Okay. Let's go to 15. Of February. You don't have 23. Okay. Let's take the 15th of February, the first page. Oh, yes. Correction on Ntlangwini's the spelling of Ntlangwini on the first page. Page 2. The presentation by the World Bank. On page 3, item 6 on page 3, which is similar to 4. I suggest we remove 6. Mover for adoption? Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of this minute with the correction that we have mentioned. Six must come out, and then adjournment needs to be number six.
Okay. Second, Honorable Madopa, thank you. 17, first page. Page 2. Page 3. Decisions. Mover for adoption. Honorable Madopa.
Of the 17th paper 2017 deliberation.
Second. Honorable Posa, thank you very much. 21, first page. Page 4. Mover for adoption. Honorable McLeod, and seconded by Honorable Madopa. 23, page 1. Page 2. Honorable Manana, are you raising your hand?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Honorable Matlopa. Second, yes?
With an amendment.
Okay. Seconder? Let him speak for himself. Dr. Fika, are you seconding? Yes. He's seconding. The last set, 24th, first page. Page 2. That page. Mover for adoption. Yes. On your mic. Mike.
All right. I was saying, I think it's a trend, even in the other minutes, when you say immediately after the parliamentary support staff in attendance, introductions. Maybe we should say opening and introduction. Because we can't say introduction and say the chairperson opened the meeting, and thereafter you then say, members proceeded to introduce themselves. Maybe let's say opening and introduction. Or welcoming and introduction. Welcoming and introduction. I'm putting it to the meeting. Maybe you can correct me. But then what happens to the introduction? I'm trying to accommodate the introduction. Welcoming and introduction.
Honorable Manana.
What are we agreeing upon? Because there was welcoming remarks, and then I said no, opening and introduction to accommodate this introduction.
All right. The opening would include the welcoming, isn't it?
Okay.
And introduction. Okay. Introduction of the subject. Yes. Yes, Honorable Mark. No problem.
We don't always introduce ourselves on the
Yes, I'm saying because I was looking at the 24th, it happens when we are with other committees that we introduce ourselves sometimes. Because here it says the committee members proceeded to introduce themselves. It's not always that we introduce ourselves because we know each other here.
No, that would happen, as you say, when we meet people for the first time. Mm. Mm-hmm. Who we have not met. But it is correct that is put as a record of the meeting when that happens. So I don't think that would be a problem. I think what we were trying to correct is item one. And we are saying did we say opening and introduction?
Chair,
the understanding that opening means welcoming as well, and the introduction is the introduction of the subject matter before the committee. Sorry? End of, ma'am.
No,
Yes, that's why.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was saying.
Let me just clarify this. Introduction of members in the committee. And then there must be an item on the opening remarks. It means then there must be that item.
No,
okay.
No, Chair, I was thinking because we are talking about introduction of members, it's not always that it happens like that. The first item is for the Chair. It's opening and welcome.
Yeah.
He opens the meeting with the remarks and then welcome the members that are there. You know, this thing of introduction is not always that we do the introduction.
Yes.
That's why I was saying the first item is for the Chair. Opening the meeting, welcoming us. Open and welcoming by the Chair.
Okay.
That one, it just comes sometimes of the introduction. It can't be standing, you know.
So we say opening and welcome.
Yeah, it's opening and welcome by the Chair because it's his meeting, it's a meeting.
Okay. Agreed? All right. But for the future?
For the future.
Yes. Mover for adoption? Honorable Fosa. Seconder? Honorable Fick is tempted to second. Honorable McLaughlin. Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we're done with the minutes and our agenda for the day.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to say, if we're going to deal with matters arising, then it must be in the agenda. It can't be in the minutes without being in the agenda. So we need to put it into the agenda first so that we can deal with it in the meeting. And that will be in the minutes the following time.
I take it then that we are suggesting that matter becomes part of the agenda in the future. Yes, you made a proposal. So there are two positions. Yes, Honorable Madrap.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was of the view that matters arising are not here because there is a management committee led by the chairperson that meet with the staff and see the progress on the decisions that we have taken. So I will support what the chairperson is saying, that they must just retrieve those decisions so that when they are not implemented, the chair advises us to say that this is what he's saying. Maybe in the opening, if there is a challenge on the implementation of one of the decisions that you have taken, if there is a challenge on it, he will then, because that's opening, he has got opening remarks in it and so on. Thank you.
Look, it is probably standard practice that matters arising do get taken up when the minutes are adopted. And therefore it's an item that must be on the agenda. how then those matters arising are processed through the committee is the matter of the management committee. I think we must converge these two proposals like that. Would that be agreeable? Okay. All right. The meeting on Friday is no longer with us and the PPO. We have a joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation on Friday. The item that we are supposed to deal with the PPO, the research findings on ESCOM, is postponed to another date, Wednesday next week. Yeah, it's on the updated program. The meeting starts at 9 o'clock on Friday. Yes, but 9:30. Okay, all right. Honourable Posa. Honourable members, can we then deal with that item? Adopt the new program, the revised program. Honourable McLachlan.
Thank you, Chair. Can we just get clarity on the time then? Because our original meeting was from 8:30 to 11. This one seems to be 9:30 to 1. Is that correct?
It was pretty old. Tomorrow. But I don't have a detail of all of that. Yes, he did whisper into my ear that I said we. But it is something related to the money bills, all the money bills. So it's critical for us to attend.
Just verify that information and then we communicate with the professor so that they then incorporate
all the program. All right, honorable members, thank you very much. Oh, yeah. Somebody needs to second the Honorable McLachlan seconds the revised program. Thank you very much. The amended one. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.